Today on Future Tense, we have Dr. Gabriela Alcalde, Executive Director of the Elmina B. Sewell Foundation, an organization that supports systemic and structural change to support animal welfare, healthy people, and healthy places. Dr. Alcalde has a background in public health, including an intersectional understanding of inequities. And that's what I'm excited to talk about. So welcome, Gabriela.
Thank you, Chris. Happy to be here.
I want to talk about some of the ways in which you're seeing the pandemic as a public health professional. You know, it's played out in some surprising ways. And I wondered, from your perspective, as somebody that might have anticipated some of these things or had experience with this, how has our response to the pandemic looked to you as a public health professional?
Yeah. First, I'll just say my background is in public health. I am not an epidemiologist or an infectious disease specialist. My background's more on the policy and population health part from social justice perspective. So having said that, I would say it's both the pandemic has both been shocking and not surprising. There have been some interesting surprises, but I think those are more epidemiological in terms of the damage it has done. I think what we're seeing is really the natural consequences of the extremely fragmented systems that are in place. I would say at a global level, but if we're talking primarily about the United States, we have fragmented system that equates democracy with capitalism and has really undervalued and underinvested in public health and in other sort of essential services for and essential policies for community well-being. So it has not been surprising that it has had such profound negative impact and such mortality. I think we saw the United States really stumble in its response. And again, live in a country that is both extremely wealthy and extremely unequal and inequitable in the distribution of that wealth.
For me, part of the surprising part was sort of how it was politicized. And the part that, you know, was surprising, but like you, also not completely unexpected, was how these systems, you know, work when it's all working for some people, but are really fragile, and the cracks through which people can fall just become so big so fast. Now, you've studied, I know, structural and systemic inequities in public health in a variety of circumstances. And certainly, as you mentioned, this pandemic has really exposed some of those inequities. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed conversations that deal with the inequities that you already knew about, or are there some new ones that are being discussed? How does that awareness look from your perspective?
I do think that's been a positive outcome so far. Is I think it'd be really difficult for outside of the extremely polarized political conversations to say that the pandemic didn't highlight and expose the vast inequities by race in this country as well as by income. But I think when you look at them by race, it's been horrifying. And frankly, even though there's a lot of talk about it, the same disparities are being seen in the vaccine rollout. But those disparities and inequities were there before. They were there in access to healthcare system. They were there in access to wealth. They were there in access to education and leadership opportunities. So what we're seeing is really what happens when you're built upon a really shaky foundation, a foundation that privileges the very few and really extracts and exploits the rest. So I think that I've seen the term racial equity used more than ever before. It used to be very controversial for me to use that term. I've, in the past year, talked explicitly and very directly about structural racism at work. And nobody bats an eye. I mean, it's evident that we live in a very racist society. I think that's progress, but we're not seeing changes, and we're seeing a lot of solutions that are being brought forth are still within the same broken systems.
You know, one thing that occurs to me when I think back on sort of the origin of some of these inequities, you know, you'd go back to the rise of neoliberal capitalism in the late 70s and the 80s. But of course, a lot of this has its history in, you know, the origins of this country. And globally, of course, it plays out a little differently. I know you're originally from Peru. And in my case, my wife is from Honduras, and I've worked a lot in Latin America, and so I have a lot of contact with family and friends that are going through the pandemic in other places. And it's a really a different experience.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that, for me, as you said, as an immigrant, and you know, most of my family still lives in Peru, just the awareness of the global inequities. So as we're dealing with the inequities within the U.S., when you pull back and you see what's happening in other countries, just the availability of the vaccine. But even beyond that, right now in Peru, it's difficult to get oxygen. And so the cost of oxygen is outrageous. And literally, people die when they don't have the money to pay for these treatments. And frankly, the same thing happens in the U.S. I want to run on the thread that you talked about, sort of where it's and certainly neoliberal policies exacerbated it. But I agree. I think it's colonization and slavery. I mean, the extractive approach, the racist approach to how this country was built, and many countries, like my country of origin, are built on this very toxic extractive mentality, a hierarchy of sorts of how we value different types of lives and different groups of people. In the U.S., and frankly, I'm seeing it rise more in places like Peru, this toxic individualism. You know, public health is premised on the on buying into and being committed to sort of the greater good, the common good. And it requires sort of a collective or communitarian mental model. And so I've always felt that practicing public health in the U.S. is really kind of controversial, because the U.S., culture is so premised on individualism, and I would call it toxic individualism. And I think we're seeing some of that with the pandemic. I want to talk about what's good for me and at most for my people, but I don't care what happens to the rest. And that there's no way to build a society upon that.
Yeah, yeah, I've written about that some recently. In fact, too, this you know, our origin myth of this independent and self-sufficient individual is really problematic in some of these solutions. Now, thinking sort of towards the future, you know, I wonder a lot about the lasting repercussions of this pandemic. I mean, we know we have sort of the long haulers that have symptoms or repercussions from the disease for a long time, but I'm even thinking about things like mental health or education. And wanted to see what you thought about that. What sort of long-term effects do you anticipate?
So I'll answer from the less optimistic and the more optimistic. So from the less optimistic and frankly just realistic at this point, I think there's a lot of trauma. Clearly mental health is going to be an issue, and I'd say for the broad population, social isolation has negative impacts on people's physical and mental health. There's the trauma of losing loved ones and not being there to say goodbye to them or not being able to take care of them. The economic gaps have widened in this country, and I would imagine in other places as well, but this country, because there really isn't a safety net. So we're seeing all of that already play out, and then we're going to see recovery and the policies and programs that support recovery. Unless we change things dramatically, they're going to continue to exacerbate the current inequities. With my optimistic hat, I like to think about, you know, the reason that I joined the organization where I work right now, the Sewell Foundation, is because of my frustration in having worked in public health and often being told, well, you know, if you want to talk about animal well-being or environmental well-being, you go to this other place. And really missing the point that there is no way that we can have sustainable equity in our societies if we're not looking at the whole picture. So I think that thinking more holistically, and the CDC has a program now called One Health, it's really exciting to me and gives me hope that we are starting to, instead of fragmenting and siloing ourselves, we're actually trying to understand things in a more holistic way. And hopefully that'll lead us to an understanding that society requires mutuality. It requires, for me, the ultimate show of love for each other is solidarity. And it's not a term that we use enough in this country. And I think it's what we need to lean into and explore. What does it mean to practice solidarity? What does that look like at the policy level? What does that look like at programmatic level? How do we change our sectors? And we have to change the systems. I mean, if we keep funding things in this very siloed way, we're never going to change things because our lives are not siloed, they're not fragmented, they're messy and interconnected, and we have to create a system that creates policy in a much more holistic way and in a way that really asks itself, what are the intended and unintended consequences if we implement this policy or this program?
Yeah, and of course, that appeals to me as an anthropologist and, you know, somebody that focuses on the ways in which these, you know, systems and structures connect. And if you're looking at the intersection of all of these things, and if you're looking at systems at all, you know, you must head towards a holistic approach. Finally, just thinking about the post-pandemic world, is there a particular thing that you are looking forward to or that you dread or that you expect to happen?
Well, I think definitely just recognizing that the existing inequities, which were vast and profound and caused a lot of suffering in this country, have just gotten wider. At the same time, between things like the movement for Black Lives and uprisings, not just in the U.S., but globally, and like I said, just the more honest way in which we're starting to talk about racism, I'm really hopeful that part of what will happen as we all emerge from this is that, you know, sort of what you see happening in Zoom calls where we can no longer hide our lives. We have to recognize that we are people with animals, families, you know, whatever else is going on in our world. That doesn't go away. And that is informing and should inform what we do in our work lives and in our public lives. And frankly, I hope that over the next few years, we can really start to tackle racism. I don't think that we can move away from the inequities. We cannot move away from the trauma unless we acknowledge it and we actually start working constructively towards healing the history and current state of this country.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking to Dr. Gabriela Alcalde, Executive Director of the Sewell Foundation. Thank you very much, Gabriela.
Thanks so much, Chris. Really lovely to join you.